Avengers Spotlight.
So you're going to save your talk of travels for when Dave and Scott are with us?
Yeah, I think because if we don't, we'll inevitably end up running all through it again.
That makes sense.
So, you know, I kind of kept you. All I'll say is I kept you guys kind of informed. Because we still have to go through. So I did so much because I was gone for so long. That I should have kept a journal because there were so many things that kept happening, you know, different things.
I think the listeners would love a Dr. Bill travel journal. I think if you had kept like a hand recorder there and you just kind of made entries into that as your journal and we posted that as an episode, I think people would have gotten a big kick out of it.
That would have been, you know. Day 5 in a car.
Yeah, there definitely could have been some.
Look, Andy.
Unless you want to try and recreate that somehow.
Nah, I wouldn't be able to capture the moment. I should have done that. I should have just hand wrote a journal and then gone back and made the recordings. Because I think I still got a tiny recorder. I just could have used my phone, I guess. Yeah, I could have done. Yeah, that's the other thing I figured out. Since I don't use the cloud. I have to I was taking photos everywhere, and then it's like, oh, your iCloud storage, your phone is almost full. I only have like a 64 gig phone. So I had pre-downloaded a bunch of podcasts to listen to. I'm like, oh, gotta drop them. Gotta get these pictures. Some of the highlights was pretending to be a Ewok in the Redwood Forest with Ben.
Ben pretending to be Bigfoot.
Yeah. Watching me being Bigfoot. Sleeping on a rock in Mount Rainier. And that's where I was pretending to be Bigfoot, too.
And this is where, like, my dopiness comes in, is I would have done the picture making it look like Bigfoot, and then I would have gotten that picture that everybody says is Bigfoot, and I would have gotten a two picture frame and put them up next to each other and put them in my living room or something.
Yeah, there was a lot of things going on. See, don't suck me in.
All right.
I'll just keep talking about it.
Let's record an episode.
Yeah. Oh, I think we could easily fill an episode.
I think we could all
because there's like some things you guys haven't seen. Like when I this will be a highlight. This will be a teaser. So we went to the Grand Canyon, and how many times Jen's like, you know, I'm like, I'm just gonna go here and do this. No, no, it'll be all right. I'm just gonna no,
and. And I picture you being like Chevy Chase and like just kind of standing next to her for like 2 seconds and nodding your head like, yeah, that's great. And then going off and doing the thing you want to do.
I was coming close to it. But finally we found a spot that was deemed safe by all because basically I wanted to like, you know, I was like, look, I'm just going to crouch down there.
Jen, I have this rope. Like I have this rope. Could you lower me into the canyon?
I'm going to act like I'm falling. So finally we got to a spot and what's even funnier is Ben was in the car when I was doing this. So you see the side shot of where I'm at and there's no way that it looks like I could be harmed or fall or anything. So it shatters the illusion. because he's got it from the side, and I'm basically I'm crouching down behind like this ledge, but there's another ledge behind me. There's no way I could fall.
I picture, but see the especially like I've seen Jen as the voice of reason in there, but Ben as the guy who's going to just let you do whatever and think of you as
I
see her walking away for a minute, and then you and Ben deciding to do a Grand Canyon recreation of Alan Rickman falling from Nakatomi Plaza.
Dude, I wanted to do that so much. That was one of the things I kept trying. I'm like, look, okay, if we position the camera here, I could reach up.
And so I picture her coming over. No! What are you two idiots doing? You're like two of the Three Stooges, kind of.
So the picture that I got, which Katie still got it on her phone, I think, or Jen's got it, is it's kind of horrifying if you think about it, because then I saw where some guy actually fell, like people have fallen because like he hopped over the railing and wanted to get better shots. And then the guy fell down like 100 feet into the canyon. So it's really not that funny.
No, it's not.
But there's a shot where...
But it is.
Where I've got my hands and I look like I'm screaming, like I'm like, ah! Like I was caught in a moment of slight, like, ah! You know. It's not funny for someone who's had a loved one that has fallen off the canyon.
No, I'm sure it's not.
But, you know, I get a gift from my craft.
Maybe you do like a public service announcement about how this isn't safe to do at home.
You saw the Diet Mountain Dew commercial I did in the Redwoods, right? Didn't I send you guys the three shots? Three shots of me drinking a bottle? It's like a cinematic thing.
I think I saw it, but you know what? They're all blending together. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'll have to look them over again.
I mean, it was like 2.5 weeks, and I kept sending. I'm like, let me send the guys this one. Let me send the guys that one. And I kept...
The guys will want
to
see this.
Had to get Katie. I'm like, send this one directly to... So I can send it to the guys. So, but anyway, let's get into the show.
Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins presents Avengers Spotlight.
Prevents?
It does not prevent. It doesn't prevent it at all. We do, you know,
back three times.
Hold on.
If you want me.
Let me change that. Welcome to Back to the Bin enables Avengers Spotlight. And as Dr. Bill and I are... continuing our journey through this particular era of the Avengers with the Kang Initiative, but we're going to take a slight detour as we look at Avengers 2001 Annual. And I'm going to say, before we start talking about it, that's probably the biggest problem I have with it, is that it's a detour of that, and everything seemed so frenetic in, you know, up to where we are. And now all of a sudden they're having a story that's a pretty good story, and, you know, we're going to get into it. But it totally takes them away from all of these battles that are going on that we have no reason to believe have completely stopped. And they're like, oh, let's take care of this problem. And, you know, it is a problem, but it doesn't seem like with what's going on that they would have the ability to be quite as cavalier about it as they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because I reread this last night, and I was like, wow, this is really a showstopper. Yeah. It's just...
I like this story. I like this issue. I just don't know...
to a halt.
Yeah, I just don't know if this story fits in, you know, from a logic point of view at the point we're at. It makes sense that this particular dilemma would exist. It just doesn't make sense to me that they would have the ability to deal with it. It seems like it would be something like, you know what, keep him in suspended animation or whatever, you know, keep him alive, and we're going to be back because we have to fight all these battles that are going on.
I had done some looking ahead to see how far this goes. So after this, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 more issues. And we've already done
three.
Three?
I think we've done three. Yeah.
So if you count the annual,
which makes 16.
Yeah,
and that's a long story.
I know, because, and I think the only other longest storyline we've covered, I think, was like the Celestial Madonna saga.
Was that even 16 issues? I don't know.
I don't think it was. So this is kind of, I mean, if you count things that led up to it, maybe. It's been so long since I've gone back and read all those issues. I'm sure our resident historian, Kurt, will check for us.
Well, Gene is even more of our historian, because Kurt is a historian because he just kind of remembers everything. Gene is the historian because he documents everything. I see Gene, and he's going to get mad at me because he feels like I make fun of him. But, we love Gene.
Oh, no.
That's why we make fun of him, because we love him. But I picture him, like, in a cave with a beard down to his knees, and he's, doing, like, the old-time lithograph kind of writing of every episode and every, cross-referencing them all. I think there could be like a nuclear holocaust, and Gene would somehow survive, and he'd still be documenting Back to the Bins episodes.
Yep.
And I think I hurt Gene's feelings, and then here I'm voicing it for the world, but I think I may have hurt his feelings because I mentioned that Scott Rifen was like the voice of the network, and Gene has such a cool voice also, and he does voiceover work and stuff, so I think I made him feel bad, but I think the only reason Scott is slightly higher on the pecking list is because Scott has a job where his whole job is to talk to people for a living, publicly. So I think that has given him the edge. I think they both have great voices for this stuff. So I may have to throw Gene a bone and let him do some voiceover. Aren't I being generous?
Look at you, Mr. Magnanimous.
Gene, do my bidding. And, but in all seriousness, Gene does do a great job with this, and I really do appreciate it. So I hope I'm never making him feel bad when I make fun of it.
Make someone feel bad? Nah.
Well, that was the biggest, when we first started recording together, that was like one of the biggest things was we would have so much fun going back and forth with, doing like Abbott and Costello type, rifts, that I started to feel like, am I going to get Bill upset with me? Is he, am I hurting his feelings that I'm treating him like he's Lou Costello?
I love Lou Costello.
And we quickly found our ground on that. And we have our respect for each other and all. So there's never been any problems there. And I hope the same exists for Gene as I just tear him apart and make him feel bad.
That's okay. My son Ben is the new Lou Costello in my dynamic.
I'm trying to think, unfortunately, the first thing that comes to mind to me is Luther and Otis with you and Ben. But I think there's.
Oh, wait a minute! Whoa! Who's Luther and who's Luther and who's Otis?
Well, that's the problem. Is I don't think either of you is really Luther. It's almost like Otis and Otis. but I just I'm trying to think of the right duo, and maybe the listeners have somebody for me here, because I'm thinking like where the one person comes up with these harebrained schemes, and they do have to be harebrained, they can't be brilliant, and the other one's like, oh, that's brilliant, let's do it. and then it's like, okay, Ben, we're gonna recreate Alan Rickman falling from the Nakatomi Plaza at the Grand Canyon. that kind of thing. So I don't know. I'll think of some comedy duo that does that.
We do feed into each other. We were even coming up with our own skits. Like we did one in the Redwood Forest where I was like, okay, so we're going to be walking down this path. We're like telling, blah, 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 blah. Katie, we're like, okay, this is where you're going to film it. All right. All right, I'm going to say this, and Ben's going to say that, and I'm going to say this, and then you stop filming, or like, we're going to crouch down in these bushes over here. Nah, that snakes? Nah, it'll be fine. and we're going to jump up. Yes. No danger here. But Ben does he'll do the Otis music, but it inevitably sounds like the Jawa music. So I'm like, are you calling me a Jawa or are you calling me Otis? He's like, I keep getting confused because it sounds a lot alike. Same composer.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
true.
I'm like the Jawa music is brum, 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 brum. I'm like the Otis music is dum dum da da dum da 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 da. He's like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah. He turns into Macho Man Randy Savage. Oh yeah. Ooh,
yeah.
That's a great idea, Dad. Let's go do it.
Yep. All right, but anyway.
But you know, I'm just thinking when we first started, you know, really doing a lot of this, you know, Ben was still much younger because we've been doing this a long time. And that's when we did our couple of skits where we recreated, you know, them landing with Lando Calrissian. We did the Terminator goodbye and stuff, or Arnold and Carl Weathers at Predator. That's when you were desperate to find somebody to partner up with on these skits. Now you have Ben, so it's Bill gone wild.
Wild, wild, it's wild, Bill, wild. That's a shout out to Andy.
Yeah, that's the $7 million man, if you don't know. Anyway, so we are, as I think I mentioned already, we're doing Avengers Annual 2001. So they stopped numbering them for a little while.
Oh, yeah, that was so, I mean, they were just doing like 98, 97.
Yeah, but I think if they had done that all along, it would have been okay. But just I just can't stand the inconsistent numbering.
Consistently inconsistent. That's modern comics numbering for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's just start over.
So, do we have a synopsis for this one, Dr. Bill?
Yes, I will pull it from my handy-dandy book. It's rather brief.
Well, that's all right, because we're going to go over
a lot in this book.
But we're going to go over it anyway, page by page.
Very talky-talky, very wordy. All right. We're only covering, there's three stories to the annual, The Third Man, Desperate Measures, and Secret Within.
Well, we're only doing the first story.
We are?
We're covering the first story. I didn't plan for the...
No, there's three chapters.
Oh, three chapters, yes. We're doing... No, there's two stories, isn't it? There's the main story, and then there's a Jarvis story.
Answering letters.
Yeah, we're not doing that one.
But the main story is broken up into three chapters, which is The Third Man, Desperate Measures, and Secrets Within.
Yes.
So, credits is Kurt Busiek, writer, Ivan Reese, pencils, Scott Hanna, inks, Richard Starkings, Comcrafts, Albert Deschene, letters, Tom Smith, colors, Mark Sumarek. You know, you just let me chew up names, don't you, and spit them out.
I really enjoy that.
Assistant editor, Tom Brevoort, editor, and Ian Churchill does the cover art. Oh, he did some interiors, too. Oh, wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
I thought the inside was also Churchill. I'm wrong.
Isn't the inside Ian Reese?
Yeah, he is the inside, and Churchill's only the cover. That I guess they gave Churchill a credit on the cover. That's what threw me off. But,
yeah, that is a little peculiar if his only contribution is the cover.
Right, that's why I was like,
he didn't do the Jarvis story, did he?
Oh, I think he did. That's where I'm getting it.
Yes, because
I read that and I was like, wow, why does this looks so much like
the cover?
no, actually, it to me it really didn't, because when I read the Jarvis story, just to touch on this briefly, and I was like, why does this? And it reminded me of when they did Heroes Reborn, which you know what hadn't happened. Yes it had, that's right, because they even referenced that when Tony Stark goes okay, now we're touching on the story. One of the things, the big things that they covered in that Jarvis story was the whole time slip thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the art of Cap kind of threw me. I was like, man, this really looks like, and it reminded me, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, this artist. Yes, I remember him doing some things on the Avengers and...
Well, the art of Cap Heroes on that reminds me of, what's his name, Rob Liefeld.
Rob Liefeld. That's why I was like, wait a minute, did Liefeld do this? But then I was like, Ian Churchill, I'm like, oh, yeah, he was in, like, the same class or the same time frame. That's why I was like, that's why I recognize it. Yes, that was the equation. Anyway. Enough rucking around.
So, they talk about some flashbacks, but we'll discuss that when we get to them. The synopsis. In the med lab, Yellowjacket tells Wasp about the fake, quote-unquote, Hank Pym imprisoned in his hideaway. Don't you just sit in the Avengers tree with anyone else but me. No.
Don't sit under the apple tree. It somehow fits yes. into this. I'm not sure well, where no, you're making that
connection. He's got the tiny hideaway up in the tree out front.
Okay, whatever you say, Doc.
Wasp retrieves Pym and on Triathlon's advice takes the two Pyms to Jonathan Tremont at the Treune Understandings HQ. Tremont's power forces the two personalities to confront each other in Pym's mind. Garbed as Goliath and Yellowjacket, they fight, and Tremont sends Wasp into Pym's mindscape to resolve the problem. Wasp learns Yellowjacket emerged from Pym's extra-dimensional biomass. Ew. When Goliath was exposed to Kulon Goth's magic. That must have been a second time. You remember Kulon Goth?
Wasn't he in the horror magazine, the horror comics?
I believe he was okay, and I
or possibly Doctor Strange.
He may have been in that, but wasn't he Conan's main adversary and Avengers 250, Volume 1, we're talking. Was when Kulon Goth, unless I'm thinking the wrong sorcerer, turned all of New York into a Hyberian Age stronghold, like all the X-Men and the Avengers. Anybody that was on the island of Manhattan, it basically was converted back to the Hyborian Age. Do you remember that?
No, I really don't.
Because, there was a spell that took place. And basically, anybody that came into New York was affected by it. But there must have been a second time that Kulon Goth did something. So anyway, that's a different story that we may cover on a different day.
Or may not.
Boss learns Yellowjacket emerged from Pym's extra-dimensional biomass. Ooh. When Goliath was exposed to Kulon Goth's magic. It's magic. And concludes Pym, having spent his life trying to be who he thinks other people want, needs to resolve his identity issues himself. A third Pym appears, absorbs Goliath and Yellowjacket, and Pym wakes as one healed person. Meanwhile, Photon finds Justice and Firestar masquerade, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, as Treune acolytes. To investigate the Treune, they show her the spaceship being built to oppose a anticipated space threat. Photon returns to Triathlon and gives him a pep talk when he tells her about the Avengers' lack of trust in the Treunes and him. Triathlon is encouraged when Wasp thanks him for helping Pym. The Avengers depart, leaving Justice and Firestar undercover.
I never read the stuff about Treune. You know, I remember reading kind of the beginning of it when Triathlon comes and joins the Avengers and all of that, but I never saw how it resolved. So at some point, I'm going to want to read those things. Whether or not we cover them, I don't know.
We'll just leave it at that.
Or, you know, yeah, it's possible we do an episode on that, or it's possible we don't. as it is, we have as it is, we have 12 more issues of this particular run to cover before we should really start planning out what our next thing is going to be.
I have been seriously thinking of doing a Avengers reread from the first issue. And then I thought, I don't know if I'm stealing this from Mr. Andrew Leyland, because he's doing that. Although he's just covering, I think, the with his new show, The Amazing Spider-Man, he's just, it sounds like he's just going to do the Ditko, you know, Stanley's run on it. Like the first 100 or so.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he's going to do, but I will, and I have not yet. I don't know if he's actually published an episode yet.
Yes,
he's
got two of them up.
Okay, because I have not listened yet, but I can tell you I will definitely be listening.
I've listened to the first one like three times because I kept listening to it while I was on the road, and I kept...
You got distracted?
They're very short, and that's what I thought. It's like, what if I did 5 minutes, or, you know, like I did Dr. Bill's 5-minute Avengers review and set a timer and just try to encapsulate an issue in 5 minutes.
I think that would actually be kind of cool. We could probably set up a separate feed for that so that people can or can't subscribe to it depending on what they want. And I like, kind of, if I were producing this with you, what I would say is do a 5-minute thing on each Avengers issue as you read it, and when you have enough in the bank, start releasing like one a day. Not even, you know, not even once a week or anything like that, because that would take forever. For these 5-minute episodes, you do one a day, and you know, you just get through however many issues that you wanted to do. And that would not preclude us from
covering
the episode in depth at some point.
It would just be like, well, you know, this time around, but I've just thought of like, you know, saying, and on this time around, this is what happened.
Yeah,
this is how the story progressed.
Yeah, well,
we're also talking to a man that took most of a show to do an issue.
The con issue, yes. What's back when they? I'm trying to remember all the details, but it's been so long. But Tom Caters was a podcaster, a while back, and he was doing it. I think he was doing like Flash issues, and each day he'd have like a 5-minute episode on it. And it was you know, he had, much like Dr. Bill, he had a good sense of humor, and when he would present it, he would do it in, you know, do it in a humorous fashion, and he would give you a 5-minute review and you'd move on. So if, you know, if you were inclined, I would try and help you with it. You know, I don't necessarily want to be a co-host on it, but if you needed help with getting it set up or something, I would certainly do that.
Yeah, because I might need that help, like that auto upload thing and all that. So,
we could talk. I could be kind
that's of... been like a thing on the back burner that I thought about. Like, you know, I could do this on my own. You know, we'd have something that could be coming out. You know, make it another offshoot of Back of the Bins, but make it brief.
I don't know if I'd want it on the same exact feed, only because it might get a little sloppy. That's true. I think we set up a separate feed for it, you know, like we did for, say, Listen to the Prophets, or you know, the what you call it, the Village People, or, you know, just have a separate feed or a separate show, and perhaps Gene Hendrix could do an intro for it. Ooh,
let's see, there we go. We're already stroking the ego.
This is our lesser show. Do you want to do the whole thing?
Well, the thing I was thinking is that the intro, we'd make the intro longer than the actual show that I do.
Then people might not want to listen. You want the intro to be short enough that people are not going to avoid it because the intro is so
maybe
long.
So I was going to say maybe on the first one, but nah.
Anyway, that's a thought, and I think we should run with it possibly, but we'll get there when we get there. For now, Avengers Annual 2001. You know, the first thing that jumps out at me looking at the cover is the trade dress at the top of it makes it look like it's one of these books that's going to give you, you know, almost a book that's going to have every issue of the Avengers with a little synopsis of it. It doesn't look like it's an issue that would have a story. Do you see what I'm talking about? Where it says Marvel Comics Annual 2001.
Yeah.
That just doesn't look right to me.
Yeah.
It also doesn't look. It looks computerized, so it doesn't look. I don't know. It doesn't do it for me. But the actual cover art with Goliath and Yellow Jacket, it looks like. I mean, I guess they're both standing, and Yellow Jacket's kind of like hanging on his back, but it almost looks like they're on the floor, and that Goliath passed out and he fell onto Yellow Jacket and is crushing him.
Except, yeah, but the brick wall.
Yeah, if it wasn't a brick wall and it was kind of just a plain background, that would be my interpretation of this, is that it's an overhead shot looking down.
Yeah, because it looks like he's fallen in battle and he's like, oh! Yeah.
One of the things.
The art's good, but the positioning is weird and yeah.
One of the touches I like about it is it's got like the little staticky electricity between the antenna on Yellow Jacket's head. It's a nice little touch, I think. The crackling.
Yeah. Yeah. But is it crackling or is it like him showing, like showing motion lines, like he's like, like he's shaking his head or yelling?
No, I think it's crackling.
Really? Did he have crackling antennas?
I never saw it any other time, but there's the two antennas.
Okay, I was going to say, because I don't remember seeing it.
But I think it's a nice effect.
You know, they used to show things like that when he would use the helmet to talk to ants, if I remember correctly. You would sometimes see little zigzag.
Yeah, but not as nice as this.
No.
I think this looks nicer.
Could it be graffiti also, on the wall, for all we know.
It could be. It also lends itself to my original theory, which obviously, since you've given a synopsis already, proved to be wrong, that this was somehow going to tie into the Kang story and be a, like a time shift story.
No, because it's still taking, because they do reference it as we go through the story. It's referenced briefly that the Wasp was like, hey, I appreciate, she says to Photon, hey, I appreciate you being here, but, what about Atuma? Everybody's fine and I can be back in seconds. Actually, she could be back in way faster than seconds. It would be less than a second. It would be microseconds or milliseconds because she could travel at the speed of light. So she could be there even faster.
That is true.
That's an anally nitpick. So,
So the story opens with Avengers Fast Facts. What is it? Inside info for the fan on the go. So it kind of gives us a little Goliath background.
It made me think of Flash Facts.
Yeah. But, I guess this is all to set us up with the fact that he can, that he uses his whatever Pym particles to increase his mass and decrease his mass. And, it ends with returning that biomass from the dimension it came from. So they're already setting up the story. Or the explanation of the story. And at the bottom picture, that is one of the worst Wasp costumes I've ever seen as far as practical goes. Because she's got, her right leg is covered completely with the costume. Her left leg is not. Her left arm is covered completely and her right arm is not. And there's no reason from a functional point of view that you'd ever need something like that.
Hey, she's bringing sexy back.
Yeah, well, that's the point.
She was a fashion designer. Let her leave her alone, big ape.
I think that there's ways of the artists who are not fashion designers to create outfits for the characters that would look sexy but also functional. And I think a lot of times with characters like the Wasp, that's forgotten. And it's just, it's not that it's bothersome to look at,
but it's just bothersome if you try and see. George Perez creation?
I think it was. I think you're right.
Yes,
but it's still a bad design.
You bastard!
So we go on with the fun facts to the second page, and then from the fun facts we go to the immediate, and this almost has a cinematic feel, because it's like it fades into them rushing Yellow Jacket into the med lab, and it's Wasp in a more functional, but certainly not protective costume, along with Triathlon, racing Hank in on some sort of meta bed. And is he under some kind of glass, or is he fading?
He is fading, because that is clarified later when Monica Rambeau comes in and she's like, or is it dream? Somebody says, is he translucent?
Right.
So. Oh, that's when I think that is when they go to Dr. Fox. Somebody asks.
Yeah, no, it's on the next page. Good Lord, he's translucent. How did this happen? And that's, you know, they say Dr. Foster, so I'm immediately looking, oh, is Bill Foster there?
That's what I thought,
and
too.
It's
and it's
Jane, like, Foster.
That's right, it's Jane.
So that threw me off for a moment, you know, because I like the continuity of having, like, Bill Foster there, but this would be before they killed him off, wouldn't it? Would it not?
Yeah, they could. Well, because that's what I thought, too. I was like, oh, pour one out for Bill Foster. Damn.
So Jane Foster meets them at the lab, and they're, you know, she's the one who says, good Lord, he's translucent. How did this happen? And they don't know, and they say, it's just freaky. and then Photon shows up. Yeah, wild, Bill. yeah, and then no news, Photon, not yet, but I thought I'd asked you to go to Prince Edward Island backstop with the others. And she said, I just came from there, and everything's fine. Hercules has arrived to help out. The Scarlet Witch and Stingray have things well in hand. I can be back there in seconds if needed. And as you're right, she could be there in a second. But right now, I thought you could use another friendly face. No, no, I don't need a friendly face. I need somebody who's going to help me solve this problem.
Get out of here.
So that's when Hank, who's barely conscious, tells Jan that there's a fake Hank at the Hornet's Hideaway. Hornet's Hideaway, Maple Tree out front. You'll need code to shut down Vibra Screen. No one knows about him. He'll starve. What, another fake Hank? What do you mean? Go, because he's fake. Doesn't mean he should be left to die. So they go over, and in the tree, he's got like a,
and it's
like a lab.
Don't you sit in the Avengers tree with anyone else but me. See, that's where that fits in.
Right. And Jan goes...
The Hornet's Hideaway.
Jan goes in there. Well, I guess it shrunk down. You know, they don't really... The art doesn't make it clear. Well, I guess it does, because Jan is small.
Yeah, it does, because she's in her Wasp form. And
but
it's
hard to tell how far away from it she is. The perspective doesn't tell you exactly how small it is.
It's on a tree limb. How fucking big do you think...
It could be a giant tree limb for all I know, and she could still be...
It's not a redwood in the middle of New York.
Yes, it's
They don't have trees that big. And I know. I've seen them.
Caesar is up there with all of his apes. So she goes inside, and she finds Luke Skywalker floating in his liquid tank.
In his back
tank? Yes.
You think that's like honey in there? He's floating in honey.
Like when the bugs get caught in the amber.
In the amber.
You know, that's what he's in.
Get the honey, Junior.
So she takes him out, and he clearly also believes he's the right Hank and that the other one is fake. So, and she takes him back to the meta lab. So now they're both on the, you know, on the labs with Jane Foster wearing her COVID mask, looking at the two of them.
Why is she wearing a mask? They're translucent. Anyway, well, she is a doctor.
And now we have a reference on the next page to all the different battles and things that are going on.
Or just like where people are in general.
It's interesting to see, like, you know, the different things they have for the different people. Like for Magneto, they just have the helmet with nobody in it. And as always, I just enjoy the little MODOK face there.
MODOK! And he's got, what has he got? Is those cups of coffee? Oh,
those are AIM okay. helmets.
Okay. Yeah, but on the one to his right, does it? I swear it looks like it says KFC on it. Right?
I see what
does it
saying.
Not look like KFC?
I do see what you're saying, because...
He's like, you know, I'm going to have some fried chicken. I can't reach with my little hands and put it in my mouth. No wonder he's so angry. I can't enjoy chicken.
How did they do that cartoon without getting you to do the voice?
Or Louis Anderson, one or the other.
Well, since he's deceased, I would think you're the choice now.
Oh, okay. I'll be the MODOK replacement.
All right, I'll do the voice.
Damn.
Meanwhile, Gene is saying, I could do the voice. So then Triathlon's looking at that, and he's looking at, you know, for some reason, Jonathan Tremont is of, I guess, great concern to them. Because, I mean, we have major faces here. You got the Red Skull, you have MODOK, you have Kang, you have Magneto, you have Atuma. It's not the Atuma. You have the High Evolutionary, and you have Jonathan Tremont. So he's risen to that level of concern, I guess. But then you have also, down at the bottom of the page, you see the Wizard is in there. So he's, you know, he's kind of a mort anyway.
Well, they've got the Red Skull. It says he's active. Last known location, was he in San Diego, California?
He was on a beach somewhere wearing his Red Skull mask. Who's directly below Jonathan Tremont when you see the map? It's kind of like, is that Dormammu?
Because
I wouldn't think you'd be able to monitor his location.
That's the Mandarin, or as Andy would say, the Mandarin.
Oh, you know what? You're right. It's not Tremont. It's the Mandarin. But below him, is that Dormammu?
Yeah, I would say.
Which
so.
I wouldn't think.
Either that or Johnny Storm has pissed some people off.
Yeah, I wouldn't think you'd be able to monitor his location. And for that matter, I don't think you'd be able to monitor Loki's either.
Well, some of these people are not... Well, it says last known location for Loki is Asgard. Last known location for Doom is Planet Doom.
Okay.
And the Supreme Intelligence at the top, it says last known location is Hala.
So it's not so much that they're monitoring. They're not like monitoring them as if they have a GPS on them. They're just keeping track of where they last
where they were.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. So then moving on, we have... then we have a shot of Justice and Firestar, and I guess that lets you know that they're, or subtly lets you know that they're at the Triune.
Yeah, this is the, like, tap you on the head. Well, no, because it says that last known location was whatever in South America or Central America. They're at Cap the Entry, or anyway, it's just like, that's like a poke, like, hey, yeah, these people are still in the Avengers, and they're off here doing this. Because we'll stumble upon them later in Texas.
So, now, I guess they're giving us a little concession to what I would criticize here. Is that, you know, Jane Foster was Don Blake's nurse, and obviously she went to medical school. And, you know, I'm sure she's quite intelligent. But is she, at this point in her life and career, such an expert on things of this nature, which would be physics and biology and all sorts of different kind of factors, that she's the expert you call in on it? And I think the concession is she's the only one who's available.
Because that's why reading things like this, I'm like, you know, I really need to go back and do a complete read-through. Because I don't remember her being stationed at the Avengers Mansion.
No.
Because they went to Avengers Mansion and she was there.
But I got the feeling that she was there because she was called because they were coming in. That was the impression I had. That she came because of this emergency. But she makes mention here now that, you know, it's beyond conventional with medicine. And we haven't been able to reach specialists like Reed Richards
or Henry McCoy.
So, you know, so at least they're making a reference that she isn't this biophysics expert that these other people are, because it gets a little tiresome when everybody is a super genius. You know, not everybody's Wile E. Coyote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that she's intelligent enough to go to medical school and become a doctor is great, but she doesn't have to be like the person who's going to figure out this trans-dimensional problem that we're having, you know? I think that gets a little tiresome. So I think they kind of address it. She's an expert at conventional medicine, and this is beyond her. Anyway.
Yep.
They jump out, what's his name, Triathlon. Now, Triathlon, you know, comes to them with the idea of bringing him to the Triune understanding and whatever. But the artwork just makes him look so casual, leaning on the door jamb as he's saying it.
I was thinking that, too. It's like, I mean, yeah, of course, in my everyday, you know, heated life threatening discussions, I casually lean against the door, too, and say, hey.
You know, I think, you know, to me, it brings to mind like Han Solo. You know, it's not, you know, it's not, I don't know. It doesn't seem to tell the story correctly, the way he's so casually leaning with his legs crossed.
It's an odd choice. Yes, I agree. It's a very odd choice.
So he suggests bringing them over. And while Jan is dismissive of the idea, she doesn't want to give up any possibility. So she agrees to do it. So they bring them, and there is, what's his name? I forgot him already. That's how memorable he is. Jonathan Tremont.
Jonathan Tremont.
And he's, you know, he's got his early 2000s long ponytail, and he's wearing flowing robes. Very impressive. He's like the Dalai Lama. So he greets them, and she says,
"The understanding has been called a self-help group, a new age religion, a cult preying on the weak-minded and more. And I won't say anything else because I live in a state bad things might happen to me." I finished that sentence.
He greets Jan, and he says to her, "Gungla, there will be no money, but you will have total consciousness when you die." So she has that going for her. Which is nice.
Sorry, I sneezed there.
Well, I guess, you know, this is probably a, you know, again, I haven't read these Triune Understanding resolutions, but I'm thinking it's a shot at, you know, Jim Jones and Scientology and stuff like that. We're going to see, because I will read them eventually. So
what? Dianetics?
No. L. Ron Hubbard. No, the Triune Understanding.
Quick, we got quick time for Real Life with Dr. Bill?
Sure. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for Real Life with Dr. Bill Robinson.
So while I was in the Navy years ago, we got to a position where I was standing watch, and it was a very casual watch, so we were allowed to read our own, you know, whatever books we had. And I happened to have the book Battlefield Earth by L. Ron Hubbard. And I was reading that, and a chief came in who I was standing watch with, and he lost his shit. Because at that time, I was not really aware of the whole L. Ron Hubbard, Dianetics, Scientology, religion thing. And the chief was, and he was like, "You shouldn't be reading that on watch." Da, 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 da. Now, anybody that's read Battlefield Earth, I mean, I at the time it was an interesting book. I, you know, had seen all these other crazy L. Ron Hubbard books, and you know, that were all in the bookstores at the time, multiple volumes, and I had seen the Dianetics commercials on TV, but this guy was just like totally overboard, losing his shit because I was reading L. Ron Hubbard.
Now, had the movie been out yet?
No, this was 1993 or 2. That movie hadn't been out yet, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. So I was just reading this about, and it was an interesting story. Okay. A science fiction story.
I've never read any L. Ron Hubbard, and I only know him as, for me, it's only like satire to even mention him.
Hold on. Let me see if the movie was out.
I'm thinking the movie was not.
Yeah, because I swear it was later.
I think it was after, yeah, I think it was after kind of Travolta had reestablished himself with Pulp Fiction and, you know, a couple of other movies.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right.
And he had a little power to influence what the you know, the studios would do, and he had...
Oh, yeah, yeah, this was, yeah, because it was a... That movie came out in 2000.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of a Travolta-driven, not only vanity project, but also, you know, because he was into Scientology.
I think it was... I remember it being a much better book than it was a movie.
I have not read the book, I have not seen the movie, but from what I understand, it could not be much worse than what I hear the movie is.
Oh, the movie's...
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, see, again, I'm not really familiar with Tremont's powers and his thing, but he somehow uses his powers to, I guess, create some sort of astral plane where we have the two Hanks meeting up with each other. And also on the page where that's going on, all the way in the upper left where they have the close-up of him, I'm trying to think, was his character modeled, you know, copying somebody famous there?
Gene Hendricks with a beard.
I'm not really seeing that, but, you know, it's not that far removed. Anyway, the two of them meet up.
With a bigger beard. Gene already has a beard.
Yeah, Gene has the very short, well-trimmed beard. For those of you who don't know what Gene looks like. So,
could that be Professor Allen?
He could have been influenced by Professor Allen. That could be a slightly younger with a gray beard Professor Allen. And you know, for all I know, Professor Allen has those powers.
Yes, when he activates them, there's a smell of burning moss and peppermint.
And quarters,
which was quite a invoke. I'm like, okay, that would smell pretty weird.
So the two of them meet up and they talk and they both say that the other is a phony and that they're, you know, usurpers and blah, blah, blah. And then they start fighting away. Fight, fight, fight.
Fight, fight, fight.
And
so.
Yeah.
So obviously they're each becoming translucent because they are essentially the same person. And their consciousness is one of, like, created a duplicate. Or did it create a duplicate?
Well, I don't think it's a duplicate as so much as he's got
personality
disorder and the different personalities are separating.
His personality took the biomass and created another body for itself.
Yeah.
Like, that's how deep his schism is in his mind. That he was able to subconsciously create another body for another consciousness.
And the biomass can't sustain the two bodies for some reason.
They're starting to fade. Maybe they're starting to fade because it's half of a mind.
Yeah, maybe the consciousness isn't enough.
Half a mind to, yeah, it's not enough to
maintain.
Punch you in the face. So, I mean, it's a pretty deep concept that kind of, I don't want to say it gets glossed over, but it's a very, you know. Wow, I'm so deep.
No, I agree. It is, you know, I just, you know, we've done a couple of episodes on Is It Yours about movies where they talk about, like, you know, they give, like, some sort of psychology things and all of that. And I wonder if this isn't, like, just too cavalier with how they're viewing multiple personality disorder. And is it that he has multiple personality disorder, or does he have, like, some other type of psychosis on top of that? And they're just making him so incredibly troubled that it bothers me a little.
But they've always done this with him.
Yeah. I think they sometimes take it too far.
Until now, I think corrects that, because after this, I don't know if it's in this book or one of the later volumes of the Avengers where Hank Prym becomes the scientist supreme.
Yes, that is later.
Much later, I believe. But you know, maybe this is seen again. That's why I want to do a read-through, because this is the beginning of the finally repairing his psyche.
Mm-hmm. So Tremont senses that something is not quite right in Pymland, And
this guy ain't right.
And that's when he decides to send Jan into this astral plane that they're battling in. And then we cut.
What could go wrong?
We cut to Triathlon and Photon talking about what's going on. And clearly he's got a chip on his shoulder because, at least as far as I can tell, he has no evil intent. But everybody is suspicious of the Triune understanding from which he came. And therefore, you know.
He comes from something that is suspicious. Therefore, he is suspicious.
Yes. And I think as a reader, This is kind of well put together, because as a reader, you're suspicious of him as well, or at least I think I am, and you're wondering, you know, is he some sort of sleeper agent? You know, I think when he talks about his intentions being pure, you know, you buy that, but is he some sort of a sleeper agent that somehow is going to, you know, come back to haunt them down the road? And that's what I'm talking about, that I don't know how that gets resolved. And clearly he's not a character that's still kind of hanging around, at least as far as I know. So I'm thinking that resolution somehow completes his story arc. And I'd like to see how that goes. So Yellowjacket and Goliath are battling away. Jan comes walking in. And what else is going on, Bill?
Whoa. So I just want to make a note. So after he talks to Monica, she's like, I'll go for a walk and stretch my legs. Maybe I'll find the lobby, because he had mentioned brochures in the lobby. And it made me think, okay, because we had just brought up before that she could travel so fast and that she said it took her seconds. But so theoretically, she could just go search this whole base and find whatever she wants. But maybe she can't, because maybe moving at the speed of light, she doesn't have the senses or the ability to take in everything, because she goes, after we talk about Goliath and Yellowjacket fighting, we're going to get back to this, to where she finds other people, but she's doing the slow walk through the entire compound. And I was like, did anybody really think that, okay, maybe she has to walk that slow to actually find things she's looking for? Like, does she have, traveling at the speed of light, can she perceive things? Like, maybe it does take her seconds to travel such a short distance, because she has to be able to, you know, maybe she's not using light speed all the time because it's way too fast and she can't see where she's going.
That's the way I'm seeing it. I'm thinking she can get from point A to point B incredibly fast, but she can't mentally slow time to the point where she could, like,
to take, you know, everything
it's,
in.
It's not the scene from the X-Men movies with, you know, Quicksilver running and you know, he slowed down time so that he could take everything in a second, you know, and start moving things around and fixing things and doing everything. Or even I think the Flash has that ability to some extent. But I don't think that we have that with her. I think she's just got the ability to move that quickly, but not perceive any quicker.
Well, but as you move faster to the speed of light, doesn't your perception slow down?
I guess, you know, now we're starting to get into, like, extreme physics. And since we...
My head hurts!
Well, since we can't move at the speed of light, it's all theoretical. You know, I don't know that there's any answers to that. And perhaps if he's listening, Blaine can tell us, because he's probably moved at the speed of light at some point in his career.
I know when I got to go to the bathroom, I'm moving at brown speed.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess there's a lot of questions that would go with, you know, as you move faster and approach Mach 1. Oh, no, not Mach 1. Mach 1 is the speed of sound. What is, I guess, warp one?
Well, you see, the way brown speed works is, how fast can you move and not release your bowels? It's a fine equation you have to maintain the balance of.
And the older you get, the shorter that time becomes.
That's right. You have to, your body is constantly recalculating that. It's like distance, time, muscle control. And then you get browned out, and that's not good.
So back to the story. So Jan makes her way to the whatever plane that they're having their fight on, And what's interesting is when she shows up, Goliath is concerned that she shouldn't be there, that she's in danger, whereas Yellowjacket is happy that she's there. And Goliath stops Yellowjacket and says, "Don't go near her. You're not fit to. She's got to be protected from you, from us." And you know, she questions, why does she have to be protected from them? And she says, "Don't you see he's dangerous? You married him, he was crazy, wasn't right, and later when things went bad, he was the one who hit you, Jan, the one who hurt you." So
right.
So, you know, that's like the layer of guilt that Goliath carries for the personality that isn't even him. You know, that's the multiple personality aspect of it. And then, he mentions Kulan Gath, that he allowed the extra form to break free. So, but that says to me that he was aware of this all along. You know what I mean? Unless you're going to say, well, he pieced it together somehow later.
I think he pieced it together later.
I think that's the only way that makes sense, because if he was aware of it all along. I think it's because
they're on this mindscape.
Yeah, and also he said it was an imposter. So, no, he didn't say it was an imposter. Yellowjacket said it was an imposter. So anyway, my head is hurting. So we move on to chapter 3, which, you know, Photon is strolling around, and all these hooded people, you know, robed hooded people, and then she runs into Justice and Firestar, and you know. Oh, she's, you know what, I was looking at this, if Firestar with like energy coming out of her hand, and I'm thinking, yeah, that's a good way to stay undercover, but the dialogue explains she's scrambling the surveillance devices so that they can walk out, and then they show her a extremely large spaceship that's being worked on.
And it's
on.
A spaceship that's powered by a psychic induction grid. So the concern that if they like if it gets fired up, that it could like burn out people's minds.
Which then goes into the cult, you know, Jim Jones and all of that stuff, you know, nature of this. So that, you know, it shows that they have reason to be concerned, at least.
Yeah, it says, I'm worried that they could kill every believer in the compound because it's powered by their belief.
So, and then we cut back to the mindscape where the battle is going on. And they're talking about their different personalities and what they did. And she sees this as like almost silliness that they're both so insecure and they have such problems. I'm sorry, I love you, but I can't help you. This is something you've got to solve for yourself, or you'll really never be whole. Maybe there is a third force, a third factor, but it's not me. Then they look evilly at each other, side eyes at each other. And we cut back to the Triune Understanding for a moment. Wasp just woke up, doesn't look happy. I hadn't realized before just how deep the hostility between the Avengers and the Triune went. Kind of a minefield sometimes. And Photon says, you must be pretty angry about it all. And then back to the mindscape. So in the mindscape, they're like kind of standing back to back and being annoyed at each other. And they're debating, you know, who's right, who's wrong, what they need to do. Some really nice artwork here. You know, I have a tendency to, you know, just to go off of this for a moment, but I have a tendency to think of this as like a 90s book, even though we're into 2001 by now. And a lot of the 90s books artwork was influenced by like that, you know, that manga look, you know, and it really,
well,
it was not, I was not a fan.
Influenced by the story we have at the end of the annual with Ian Churchill's art.
Yeah, well, that too, yeah.
It's got,
But this artwork, I think, is, in my opinion, very, very nice, and it really does, except for a couple of little choices, like the whole, you know, thing we mentioned with, what's his name, Triathlon, kind of standing so casually. But that isn't so much the artwork that's troublesome to me as the choice of positioning, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So then as they're debating, someone is approaching them. And we cut back to the Triune again.
It's like a movie.
Yeah, well, it does have a certain cinematic feel to it, don't you think?
Yes, yeah.
So at the Triune, you know, we have Triathlon and Photon kind of talking about their own experiences and, you know, insecurities and all of that, and they seem to come to an understanding together as to what's going on. And we go back to the Mindscape, where the third factor in the Pym legacy shows up, and that is Ant-Man, who then increases in size, and he's got his Dr. Pym outfit on, and they...
The flawed and perfect human.
The third man.
Yeah.
And he just stands there with his hands outstretched, and the other two slowly approach, and they all clasp hands, or they... Well, actually, they don't all clasp hands, because it's Yellowjacket takes one hand, then Goliath takes the other, and then there's a bright mm-hmm. light, and that would kill any gremlin. And at that point, they all come together, and Hank wakes up, and he is whole. And he's naked.
Ew.
I don't know when he got naked. He had clothes on before.
Yeah, where did those clothes come from? Well, no, he was naked to begin with.
No, I don't think so. If you look, it looked like he had like kind of khaki, like a khaki
right.
pair of shorts and t-shirt on.
Whatever. They're gone now.
And it wakes up. You know, we don't know how long this takes because he's got like a 5 o'clock shadow. And then he puts on, you know, I guess it's like a hospital gown.
Yeah.
And
well, I'm sure they had plenty of robes around there.
Yeah. And he comes out where they greet Triathlon and Photon. And obviously, Jan now has a newfound respect for Triathlon and gives him a hug.
Yeah. And everybody's like, aw.
And they board a Quinjet and they leave. And as they do so, Photon nods just slightly to Justice and Firestar, who are still among the acolytes, and they fly off. There's more to be done. There's always more. But for a moment, at least, these Avengers can breathe easy, knowing that a long-fought battle is finally over, and that it ended in victory. And that's the facts.
Except for the fact that Hank Pym was in handcuffs when he got on the Pym jet. No, he wasn't, but he does look kind of weird.
Yeah, he does look like he's wearing a blue jumpsuit as he gets on, and
he's got no hands.
Yeah, you can't really see. It looks like his arms. It almost looks like he has one of those robes where the sleeves are very big, and you kind of put your arms on each side of it.
Right. He's wearing a Jedi robe. He's got his hands clasped. Or it could be doing an Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Or it could be a straitjacket.
Or it's a straitjacket. Or he's in handcuffs, and they didn't want to do the perp walk. Yeah, okay, just shut up and get on the Quinjet, you crazy bastard.
So the biggest thing I have with this is I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the artwork. I thought it was good. It definitely was not what I expected because of, again, I thought there were going to be time slip issues that were causing the duplicates. My biggest problem is just in the positioning of this story. It's like, there's such frenetic energy going on in the main book, and then this is like, we're going to slow down and go to a spa.
Yeah, it's like, I'll stop.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, and that's the only thing, is just the pacing of the story as it's going forward. If this was like a TV series, and, you know, the last episode was the last book we did, and now this episode comes out for a little bit of a change of pace, I'd be saying, does this make sense to have this here?
Well, and maybe since it's been so long since either of us really read any of this, that we may see that maybe they had to resolve this Hank Pym storyline because of something he's going to do later on. I don't know if that's the case. Or maybe they were just tired of dragging this along, or they wanted to stop Triathlon being... you know, bring him further into the fold to later then maybe make it harder. You know what I'm saying? Maybe they were just, this was a, they had to pause, build up some tension, fix some things, set some things up, and then get their story back on track.
I hope it's not just, oh, this is to further the story. I hope this is, you know, something that, even though I feel like it's kind of misplaced a little bit, I still would
wrap. Or maybe just wrap up this. Maybe they were tired of dangling this or having this, you know.
Maybe. But I would rather it not, I don't know. I would rather it not be just, oh, we needed him to be whole again, so we did this to jam it in there. Mm. I would rather it just be that, well, you know what? Yeah, it's a different pace, but it's an annual, and we wanted to tell this story. That's what I just want it to be, and I can criticize it, but overall I'm good with it because my rating for this story in a vacuum is going to be pretty high as opposed to rating it as part of that saga.
Yes. Yeah.
So that said, I like the cover, but it doesn't really totally jump out at me as something like, oh, I need this. But I like it.
Artistically, it's nice, but effectively, I mean, it's like...
From a sales point of view, it loses a little something for me.
Yeah, I mean, so I would give it a B+.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. The interior art, I really like the look of this. I think it's real easy to follow what's going on. I think the renditions... I didn't see one drawing in this where I thought, oh, that's a bad look. I'm going to say an A on the interior art.
Yeah.
And the story, again, it definitely went against my expectations of what the problem was with Hank. It really kind of went back to the roots of what they've done all along, as opposed to kind of sticking in some sort of time slip element, which is what I thought they were going to do. And I think their idea is probably better than mine. Oh, you know what? A professional writer had a better thought about writing something than me. But, you know...
Well, because how often... I mean, time slips are always... It's like, oh, God, another time?
Yeah, I think my thought of where this was going to go is less creative and less built into the history of the character. My biggest problem with it is I just feel like, oh, stop piling on poor Hank. But they're also resolving some issues with him. So I think, you know, overall it's fine. I enjoyed reading it. I liked the... I thought everybody was characterized pretty well. I'm going to say an A on the story, even though, you know, I had some slight issues with it.
I would give it an A for its standalone story, but A-, B+ for tying into the narrative we've been reading.
I totally agree with you. My A is in a vacuum.
Yeah.
So... I'm going to say the book on a whole, in a vacuum, is an A, and as part of the saga is a B.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. I concur.
And then that'll do it for this annual, and the next time that you get a solo... How can it be a solo if it's two of us? An issue with just Dr. Bill and myself, we'll do the next issue of the Avengers... which
will be number 44, also cover 44/459.
Ooh.
And we will see some Stingray. We will see, are we back to, we will have Manuel, okay, Kurt Busiek, Manuel Garcia, and Bob Layton.
I'm going to look forward to seeing that.
Oh, yeah, there's a shot of Hercules. Wow.
Hercules. All right, well, I think we've kept everybody long enough. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week with some sort of show.
Something.
We'll give you a little something.
Little something.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.2truefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corps of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.